show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we have another week of Royals, legitimate, real Royals baseball to talk about, and we will get to that in just a minute. But first, of all, I, of course, am Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, is the effervescent Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this wonderful evening?
I would say I'm a little more sunburnt than effervescent.
You know, there's a glow, though, is what I'm trying to get.
Okay, yeah.
Your sunburnt? Like was there an excursion this past weekend?
I was just tailgating.
Oh, that's
tailgating,
right.
Tailgating on
opening. Oh, you got sunburnt on opening day. Then.
Yeah, it was dumb. I was smart. I took sunscreen, and I applied the sunscreen. I applied it, like, hourly, and I forgot to take it inside the stadium.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I screwed that up. So.
Rookie mistake.
It really is. I should know better, but I screwed up. It's not too bad. It's just, you know, just a little pink.
It happens.
You know, no problem.
Been there.
It's early, you know, small sample size.
Yes.
We'll figure it out. I'll be in midseason form in no time.
Indeed. One thing that has not happened, no more than one other time, though, is once you went into the stadium, the players on the field, those being the Royals, of course, got shut out on a home opener, which happened this year and had not happened previously since 1971, at which point, if you recall, the Royals would be 2 years old as an organization at that time.
They'd have been playing in a municipal stadium instead of...
That's correct.
Then or later Royal Stadium. So yeah, it's the first time they've been shut out in their home opener in this building. That's fun.
Yeah, total fun. So you got to see history is what you got to see, really. You know, 46 years in the making, history.
That's
yeah. Something, right? Yeah. It is something. So,
well.
Yeah, I mean, we can kind of get into that in a minute. But first we'll talk about kind of the fallout from that game, if you will. They had an off day yesterday, so the opener, we're recording this on Wednesday as per usual. The opener was on Monday, and that was followed by an off day on Tuesday. And it's so kind of boring this early in the season. They have all these off days just in case inclement weather means you need it and all that kind of stuff. So
they have one more off day on this homestand too.
It's annoying. But
come on, it's 70 out, but whatever.
Yeah, baseball. Anyway, so season opener get shut out, off day, and then on the off day, they made the news that Matt Strom. And, oh my God, I'm blanking.
Terrence Gore.
Terrence Gore.
It's hard to remember that he was on the roster because he literally only got into a game in the last inning of the most recent game. So,
yes.
And didn't do anything. He was just hanging out. So,
which is why he and Matt Strom got sent down. But, you know, Terrence Gore. They did the same thing kind of last year. They started the season. They're, oh, it's such a weapon to have Terrence Gore on the roster. We can use him. And then after a while, they're like,
oh, crap. We need other players.
Yeah, we need someone who can actually play and not just someone we can pull out in the late innings for possibly one run. You know, that's a September call-up luxury. Yeah. And that will be Terrence Gore's career, if you ask me. It will just be September call-ups.
But Terrence Gore and Quentin Berry and those types of guys. That's what they are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, Terrence Gore, no big deal. But Matt Strom is a little bit of a different scenario here.
Yeah.
So you have in Strom a guy who, you know, he came up last year. I mean, we talked about him all offseason as kind of factoring in to this bullpen and, you know, what relevance he was going to have to the team and how he was going to be a big factor as hopefully part of their success. You know, unfortunately, in three appearances so far this season, 1.1 innings pitched, Strom had a robust 47.25 ERA with a solid 40.5. That's right, 40.5 walk per nine and 6.75 home run per nine inning ratio. So
yeah.
if you didn't get the point, Matt Strom in his three appearances was not good, has not been good.
No.
We got that, you know? And I mean, we've seen some bad starts before. You know, these things happen, especially for relievers. I mean, you come out, say you have two guys on, you know, your first appearance of the year, and it just so happens that you give up a home run. You know, so many relievers in this league are going to come out and give up a three-run homer. Just that's throughout the course of a season, that kind of thing happens. But when it's like your first, and that's not what Strom did, but just as an example, you know, that when it's your first appearance and that's what happens, then it shoots up that ERA. So Strom, in his first couple appearances, he gave up some runs, had lots of walks, really struggled with his command, really just did not look good. So the Royals sent him down. And that was yesterday on Tuesday, and then now today on Wednesday as we record this, they put out the news that to replace Matt Strom and Terrence Gore, they brought up Jake Junis and Scott Alexander. So two pitchers, both going to factor into the bullpen. There's Scott Alexander, you know, we've seen before. We kind of know what he's about. Jake Junis is a little different, though. He kind of he has a little bit of a – you know, he's been a starter down in the minor leagues. He's never really had a huge impact there, you know, and not as someone that – one of those kind of organizational depth type of guys, I think, is how you most people have kind of looked at him.
Maybe half a step up, but he's definitely like when you think of the top pitching prospects in the Royals organization, he's in that line, but he's waiting outside to get into the building, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like he's a name, but you know the expectations really have not been there for him. So I mean, he was the pitcher of the year in AA last year, and he had a good season. But at the same time, you know, he's a 2011 draftee, so he's been in the organization a while. So, you know, he made one start in Omaha this year, and it was good. Seven strikeouts, no walks, gave up four hits. It was solid. The Royals are just going to see what he can do. You know, he's on the 40-man roster. They're comfortable with him. We'll see. You know, he throws 91 to 94 with a fastball, according to Clint Skull's scouting report. He's Clint's number 17 overall prospect on the Royals. So, you know, it's in that area where it's like, okay, there's definitely something. But he's not in that class of like Zimmer and Almonte and Strom and Josh Staumont, who you kind of see that upside potential that could be down the line. Junis is just kind of like, all right, maybe he is just a guy, but he's getting an opportunity. So we'll see what happens. If his stuff plays up, he might be pretty useful in the bullpen. And if it doesn't, then he probably won't be around that long. So, I mean, he's interesting. I want to see him get into a game and see what he does in some short relief and kind of go from there. But yeah, you're right. He's kind of that organizational depth. He's not quite in that territory of guys that just fill out a roster, but he's one of those guys that you probably could have, pretty small expectations, and you just kind of see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to drop 200 innings of sub 4 ERA ball on you, but you know, he might have in a given season 5 to 10 starts and, you know, be kind of an up and down type of thing and have a decent you know, play a decent role. You know, there's a need for that in baseball. It's hard to make it through the season with just 5 pitchers. So having someone that you can rely on to give you some spot starts is important. You know, if that's what he ends up being, then nothing wrong with that.
Nope. And, you know, he didn't pitch great in spring, or at least the numbers weren't great in spring training. So for the Royals to call him up now, you know, suggests they have some confidence in him. He's if he can go from that 91 to 94 and hit about 97 out of the bullpen, that's going to be useful for the Royals. And another thing is he's right-handed. The Royals are strangely left-handed in a lot of spots this year in the bullpen. So that gives them a little bit more flexibility, especially if they're calling up Scott Alexander. You know, then it gives them another right-handed option instead of Peter Moylan, who might have his arm fall off by the end of May.
Oh, Peter Moylan.
If they end up having to use him more than they want to. So, you know, interesting moves. I don't know if either will be long-term. A lot of that depends on Strom, and the Royals seem comfortable that he's going to get his mechanics back and get the command back. And like you said, it's tough with relievers because, you know, one game, one bad inning, that'll blow you up, especially early. And granted, it's not like he got unlucky and his numbers are skewed. You could see him. The fastball was sailing. He didn't have a lot of control of it. He wasn't doing very well. So, you know, he could get the confidence boost. But I also think that, you know, over the course of a full season, Strom should probably be okay. I mean, look at what he did last year. He was lights out for a month and was pretty good the rest of the time he was with the big league club until he basically got shut down once the Royals were kind of out of the picture. So not too worried about him. You know, the walks are concerning, but he's not, you know, he's in good company because everybody else in the Royals is pretty much walking guys except for, you know, strangely, it's like Jason Vargas. I don't think he walked anybody, or maybe he walked one guy. I think Vargas walked the leadoff guy, and he didn't walk anybody the rest of his start. And that's kind of about the best case so far for the Royals.
Yeah.
The bullpen reinforcements can certainly help. And, you know, it's not like the Royals were using Terrence Gore anyway, so they may as well get an extra guy and give them another option and not overwork everybody before you get through the first month of the season, you know, because they're already into that spot where Moylan couldn't go because they used him too much. Minor, they don't want to use back-to-back. So, you know, you don't want to use Chris Young every day because he's really your long reliever. If you get into a spot where you want to use him, well, you know, if you used him for an inning the day before, you might not want to use him to mop up 4 innings the next day if he needs to. So, you know, it makes sense. It makes sense. They're not going to use their full bench most games. So if you get a couple arms up, gives them some flexibility there. And you just see what happens. Maybe someone shows some potential and can stick around. And if not, well, you know who's going to be able to be sent down for Matt Strom. And you know who's going to be able to get sent down when Jorge Soler is off the disabled list. And makes it easy that way, too. So, you know, it's pretty cut and dry little transaction, but interesting because, you know, it is Junis and he does have a little bit of potential and kind of a wild card to see what he might be able to do out of a big league bullpen.
Junis being up, kind of an interesting little tidbit. You know, we'll see what he does. You know, kind of, was it Alec Mills they brought up last year for a wee bit? You know, similar type scenario. Don't know that you're expecting much, but hey, maybe somebody comes up and they catch fire. But the bigger story, and you kind of mentioned it, you know, in and of itself, the things that happened, you know, Strom, Gore, Alexander, Junis, up and down, nothing more than just kind of slightly interesting. But one of the things that has struck me the most, and I kind of went on a little bit of a Twitter rant about this morning, is the kind of inconsistency within the Royals. That it's something that it's always been there, you know, even throughout the years when the Royals have made lots of good decisions that have led to, you know, 2 World Series and a World Series title. there's still been some slight inconsistencies there. You know, because the team and the players were so consistent themselves, we didn't really see it as much. But, you know, you saw it way back in, you know, the early as they were trying to turn the bullpen into this dominant weapon, you know, back in the 2011-2012 range. You know, you saw it with Aaron Crow and the obstinance that Ned Yost had in terms of, you know, giving him his particular inning, and that was it. You know, and you saw a little bit of it last year with, you know, they kept putting Joaquin Soria out there as the eighth inning guy, even though clearly Kelvin Herrera was the better pitcher last year. His, you know, recent history showed that he was much more deserving of being the eighth inning guy. They still put Soria out there for a long time until he struggled so much they simply could not do it anymore. And then, you know, so these kinds of things we've seen. And then you've got also, you know, the Alcides Escobar situation of when he was struggling mightily early on as an everyday player trying to hit the ball. And they said, well, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, when we get good, you know, we keep him in there so that when we get good, he can actually perform when he needs to, you know, and to a certain extent it worked. But, you know, now we've got, especially with Matt Strom, you've got a situation. He gets sent down because of three bad appearances, 1.1 innings of bad pitching. You know, it was bad. There's nothing you can say about it, or nothing else you can say about it. But then on the flip side, you've got Raul Mondesi, who we talked a lot about the spring training, you know, and as much hype as there was a few years ago for Mondesi as a prospect, you know, it's been kind of weird to see him develop, because he's always been a kind of a really toolsy guy. Lots of, you know, one of those guys that almost seems like he's floating more on reputation at this point than anything that he's actually done. Because you look back at his, you know, statistically, and he hasn't really done a whole lot that's been all that great in the minor leagues. What makes it so promising is that he's usually been young for his, for whatever level in the, of the minor leagues that he's been at. So, you know, he, you know, as a, let's see, how old is he? He's 21 years old now. He'll turn 22 this season. You know, so, I mean, you're looking at a 20-year-old in Double-A a couple of years ago. And, you know, he held his own. So he didn't dominate. You know, he's not Manny Machado. He's not, you know, Francisco Lindor. But he held his own. And so it's like, okay, you know, as he continues to develop and gets more time at each level, then he would theoretically would start to dominate. But the Royals never did that. They never gave him that time. They pushed him through the system. They pushed him hard through the system. And, you know, they wanted him up. He came up last year. He spent the first half of the season suspended because of a steroid allegation that he said was a miscommunication or something. Regardless, yeah. You know, we talked about it last season, but the second half of the season, the Royals, you know, they brought him up and they were like, okay, he's our guy. We got to look towards the future. We got to get him in there, get him some experience. He's going to be a big piece of this.
Was they just wanted a spark plug.
Absolutely. Completely overmatched. Completely awful. 47 games he played, 149 plate appearances, 185 batting average, a 520 OPS. I mean, just absolutely terrible. And so the Royals saw that, decided to give him a shot still at winning the second base job in spring training, to which he apparently did, according to what the Royals thought. And so, despite all the evidence to the contrary, they thought he was ready. And he so far has shown again that he has not been ready. It's one thing to get off to a slow start. Hosmer, Kane, those guys have gotten off to a slow start this year. Mm-hmm. I am not worried about them necessarily. Well, I'm maybe a little bit worried about Hosmer, but that's a different type of worry. But like Lorenzo Cain and Alex Gordon and those guys, I'm not too concerned about that. They're going to get theirs. You know, it's just a matter of where they'll be within their normal range.
And even 2012, Eric Hosmer got off to a slow start, but you still weren't that worried about him.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm okay with those slow starts. But when you look at Raul Mondesi, he's gotten off to a slow start. He looks overmatched. And you know, it's one thing to even to peel back another layer of this. It's one thing to look completely overmatched. It's another thing to look completely overmatched and then for the player to look like they themselves know they're completely overmatched. Mm-hmm. Mondesi looks like he has no confidence in his abilities. He looks like he knows or thinks that he shouldn't be up in the major leagues, and he probably shouldn't if you ask me. And he's up there. I mean, he is bunting a extreme amount because we can only assume that he just doesn't have enough confidence to get up there and swing the bat, have a normal at bat for the most part. He got a hit the other day, you know, but it's nothing special. And it wasn't anything that made you think, okay, maybe he's turning it around. Mm-hmm. And he's up there, he's bunting with two outs. I mean, he's just like, he's not providing any value to this team. And the one thing that they could say, you know, when you stripped it all away, he was going to be a gold glove defender no matter what. You know, his defense hasn't been all that impressive either. And I guess it's kind of hard to learn a new position, I suppose. But at second base, you know, he should still be able to, you know, to do so. He's, you know, booted a couple balls and, you know, there have been some difficult plays that he's tried for and not made that you can't really fault him for not making those plays. But, I mean, if he's as spectacular as everyone says, then maybe he should be making those. And then he would at least be adding something. You say, okay, he's hitting 143, but he's giving you gold glove, really good defense. So he's kind of making up for it there, but he's not even doing that. So the Royals are saying, Matt Strom, you came up last season for essentially the same amount of time as Raul Mondesi, dominated, looked really good, looked like you belonged, looked like you had the confidence, looked like you everything was going great, and you struggled a little bit. We don't have the patience to wait around for you to figure this out. We don't have that patience. We have to win now. We're going to send you down. We're going to bring up somebody else, hopefully, who will do better. That's the message they're sending by bringing Strom down. Raul Mondesi, on the other hand, and this is, you know, we don't want to jump to too many conclusions. Small sample size at 7 games, but mm-hmm. we're also talking about the fact that we saw a lot of Raul Mondesi last year. So, you know, and again, this goes beyond just the numbers. It's more looking at what you're seeing. And I haven't watched all the games, but what I've seen, Raul Mondesi does not look like he belongs yet. I have faith that he will at some point in his career, but right now he doesn't. There's no shame in that. He's 21 years old. But if the Royals keep putting him up there, he hasn't cost the team a victory yet. Cause, I mean, they haven't been in a position to win a lot of the games they've lost.
Not really, no.
but he will. Similar to how Alcides Escobar did when he was struggling early on in his tenure with the Royals. So it's a bit of a mixed message and kind of an inconsistency of message to see the Royals say, Matt Strom, you've had some struggles. Even despite your past success, we're going to send you down because we just can't. We can't sit here and wait for you to figure it out that your innings are too valuable. And then on the other hand, say, Raul Mondesi, we've seen absolutely nothing from you to suggest that you can be a good major league player this moment and help the team right now, but we're going to give you a free pass anyway. We're going to push you through the system the last few years, even though you haven't really dominated at any level. You've been just good enough. You know, and then you couple that with what Ned Yost said in spring training about Mondesi. Oh, you know, we don't necessarily need him to hit. We just need him to do one good thing per game or something to that effect. That is what Ned Yost said. And the message they're sending Mondesi here is it's okay. You don't have to be good. You don't have to get better. Just be good enough and we're okay with it, you know, and that's not the message that needs to be sent to Raul Mondesi. And all they're really doing is allowing him to just destroy his own confidence by failure, essentially, you know. And yeah, you need to learn how to handle failure, but you know, at yeah. some point it doesn't,
that is a lot to carry.
So that's kind of my big takeaway from this. And again, this is beyond just, it's only been 7 games, so I'm not trying to jump to any conclusions based on the numbers, but just what I see with my eyes, what I saw last season, you know, what we know about how young Mondesi is and the issues that he has that are known, You know, I see nothing to indicate that he's going to be able to rectify those anytime soon in order to help the team win. So maybe he's not actively making them lose right now, but he's certainly not doing anything on the other hand to help them win. So, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you just watch him. And the biggest issue for me with watching Mondesi is the frequency of the bunts, because it does seem to me like he gets up there, doesn't want to be facing the pitcher, but he knows he can get a bunt down and that he's fast. And I think there were a couple times last year early in his call-up where he threw a bunt down and he drew a throw and the throw went wide and he managed to get to second or to third base. And it feels like that's a really productive thing. Hey, you put the pressure on the defense. You made them make this play. They didn't. Now you're at second base. You got some extra bases out of it. And I don't know if that's necessarily playing on him or not, or if it's just that he knows he can get the bunt down and is just kind of going with it. I don't know. But he does look overmatched. And the problem that was happening last year was pitch recognition and strikeouts. And he struck out a ton, and most of the time it was on a breaking ball. So that's pretty much all he's seen is a breaking ball. And he's swinging and missing, and he's not hitting with authority, and he's trying to bunt, and he's doing a lot of the same things that he was doing last season. And yeah, I mean, I think they have rushed him, and I think it's really weird. You know, I mean, I'll give him credit. He did play well in spring training. He hit well. He hit for some power. It sounded like it was going well. And I think there was a point somewhere two-thirds through camp where Ned Yost made his decision, and you started to see Whit Merrifield play more first base, more third base, some outfield. You saw Cuthbert playing first, playing third. You saw Cologne playing short, playing third base. You know, and Mondesi basically was playing second base and sometimes shortstop if, you know, it was later in the game or whatnot. And I think that was where the decision was basically made. And it seems like everybody's already come out of the gate and they're pitching Mondesi differently than spring training. He's not adjusting. He hasn't seen that high-quality breaking ball enough to learn to either lay off of it or to do something with it. And that's a problem because he's not hitting. He has made a couple of good defensive plays, but he has made his mistakes in the first seven games. So, you know, he's done some good, but you know, all in all, it's pretty much a wash. So I don't think he should be up now. The other thing in all of this is that there is an easy alternative. Whit Merrifield had a good spring. He hit better as spring went on, and he has three homers and is hitting .381 through the first five games in AAA. Now, is he going to continue to do that? Probably not. We saw Merrifield come out hot last year, and he had some struggles of his own. But he also finished the year playing pretty well. So it's not as if the Royals are out if they don't have a guy to come up. So you brought up the Alcides Escobar moments in 2011 and 2012, and that kind of period where, you know, Ned Yost took a lot of flack for not pinch hitting for him. At that point, the Royals weren't a team that had playoff aspirations. They knew that they were still working towards that. They had time to let those situations develop. And even more, they didn't have an option. They didn't have a backup. They didn't have another shortstop who was worth anything to come up in place of Escobar, who was going to give them any better chance of winning or getting better as a team. So, I mean, even though they stuck with Escobar, they didn't really have a whole lot of choice in that matter. Now they at least do. I mean, you could play Cologne at second base. You could play Whit Merrifield at second base. You could give Raul Mondesi a full season in Omaha, and I think that would probably give him more of a benefit than flailing at things at the big league level like he is now. And it's a shame because I think he does have a lot of talent, and I think he's shown some flashes of it. But, you know, if the Royals rushed him, there's not a whole lot you can do other than to slow it down. And they don't seem to be ready to do that or willing to do that. I'm not sure why. I mean, maybe it's a pride thing, and maybe it's just a matter of time. You know, it is only seven games. You know, they probably don't want to just panic and react to everything by making those kind of call-ups and options and all of that. But at a certain point, you know, they're going to have to really face it and say, look, he's not ready to do this. you know, Billy Butler was sent down at one point. Alex Gordon famously was sent down well into his big league career. Mike Moustakas went down. Eric Hosmer never really got there, but you probably could have in 2012 at some point just to give him the break. And there's no shame in that. There's no shame in regrouping and seeing what you can do and getting that confidence back. And that's the same thing they're doing right now with Matt Strom. You know, it's I think it's a little different of a situation in that the bullpen, you can't necessarily just hide a guy like you might be able to with Mondesi and just have him hit ninth, and he can still contribute as a speed option, as a defensive option. You're really only giving up three or four plate appearances a game, whereas Matt Strom, you could tell in that game on Sunday in Houston, they did not want to bring him in because they just weren't sure what they were going to get. They did. He struggled. He walked in the winning run and was sent down shortly after. You know, it's, you know, now they have the option where they bring in, like we talked about, Junis, they bring up Scott Alexander. They've got other guys they can come up from Omaha to pitch in the bullpen. You know, it's, it makes it a little bit easier to make the decision, but it is, you know, if they're able to take a guy in Strom who dominated for weeks last year and has this early struggle and can send him down, then yeah, it is a little curious when you have a decent option in Whit Merrifield and a decent option in Christian Colon, not great, but decent. You could put either of those guys at second base and probably be better right now than you would with Mondesi. And so far, they're not doing it. In a week, I don't know. Maybe that'll change. If the Royals continue to lose games and continue to struggle to score runs, they might make that change because they'll feel that heat. You know, they're averaging 3 runs per game. You can't do a whole lot when you average 3 runs per game. And if they're sitting at, you know, 4-9 a week from now, yeah, they might start making some changes just because, as we've talked about all off season and leading up to the season, they really want to be able to get in a position where they can get some wins on the board, you know, early. They don't want to be in a position in June where they're already starting to field offers for some of the guys who will be free agents. So that's the urgency that they probably need to have in mind. Maybe it's early. You know, I understand why fans are going to want to send some of these guys down, but I guess the Royals are just going to be a little patient, but there is going to be a point where they just can't be patient. They have to make the change. And it's probably, when they do make that change, going to be better for the big league team in the short term. It's probably going to be better for Mondesi in the long term. So that's probably the smart move. I don't know why they're not going to go for it, but it is a stubborn organization. So I guess that explains it.
Yeah. You know, it's it's just frustrating to see, you know, so much pressure heaped on this year. The Royals know it, the players know it, everyone knows it, but you know, they seemingly, and it's always hard to tell, you know, with spring training, do you see a good performance like Raul Mondesi this year and you say, "Oh, light bulb turned on for him. Fantastic. Let's move forward with this." Mm-hmm. Or do you, you know, maybe wait for a little bit more? Because it, you know, I think it was 2011. Mike Moustakas had a really good spring training. They didn't bring him up, though. You know, part of that was, I think they gamed the system a little bit to try and, mm-hmm. you know, maximize the time they had Moustakas because they knew they weren't winning in 2011. So, sure. You know, that factored into part of it as well. But, you know, at the same time, it wasn't, you know, they put him down to start the season. You know, same with Eric Hosmer, even though I don't think Hosmer had as good of a spring that year, but my spring training recollections aren't right. Always the best. But, you know, it's frustrating to see the Royals on one hand have this sense of urgency that is needed, and it's good that they have it, but on the other hand, kind of play the development angle and, you know, again, it'd be one thing if it was a slow start, but it's another thing to see what he's doing, to see him not look comfortable, to see him just flailing, to see him all the bunts and everything, and it's frustrating.
Yeah. Maybe it might be different if the, you know, let's say that third game in Minnesota, they they actually take a lead and hold it, or they hold on in Houston or something. It might be different. It might be different if they're 4-3 instead of 2-5, just because, hey, you're winning, things are going. Maybe it's just, you know, the utter panic of a bad start. But I mean, it is tough. It's tough to watch a Mondesi at bat and feel confident that anything positive is going to happen.
Yeah.
It should happen with a guy who was your number one prospect for a while.
Right. And you can kind of look at that as, you know, Mondesi struggles offensively, though they are different than most of the players. You know, it's kind of still a microcosm of the players as a whole, because the team offensively right now, beyond Mondesi, is struggling. And we kind of talked about it a little bit. You know, Eric Hosmer's gotten off to a slow start. You know, the joke around the Royals Twitter community is that, you know, April is the new June for Eric Hosmer. You know, normally he'll have after a couple months of starting off hot or whatever the case may be, he'll have a downturn for a month or two. And that's just the story of Eric Hosmer, as it were. But, you know, this year he really – and again, this is, it's not based on the sample size so much as it is seeing Eric Hosmer. He looks like he normally looks when he's going really bad. Like, you can see the difference in how Eric Hosmer looks when he's going really good. He looks confident at the plate. He looks scary, honestly, mm-hmm. You know, looking at it from the view of an opposing pitcher. And that is something that is noticeable. But when he's going bad, you can see it too. He doesn't look comfortable. He moves around a lot. His swing looks kind of jerky. He swings at the low and away pitch. He tries to hit 10 home runs with one swing. That's the Eric Hosmer we know when he's going really bad. That's what he looks like right now.
And then he hits it to second base on the ground.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As I joked and said, he switched his number to 4-3, because that's see quite a lot of that.
Pretty much it. I mean, that's what he does. He's got a 60% ground ball rate.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, we did the over-under, and
I said over.
He's way over right now. 58,
and there he is. Yeah. Or no, did we set it at 55 still, or did we
set it at 55, yeah.
55, yeah. So 58 was what it was last year. But, you know, and then you look at, you know, Lorenzo Cain, not off to that great of a start. Alex Gordon, not off to that great of a start. And you see a team that they seemingly tried to make a shift this offseason from putting the ball in play, getting on base, creating havoc that way, to a little bit more of a power-oriented team. You know, signing of Brandon Moss, trading for Jorge Soler, who, you know, in fairness, we haven't seen play yet in Major League or real baseball that's non-spring training because of his injury. He should be back in a few. He's going to take batting practice on Friday, I believe, is what I heard from Rustin Dodd. So, you know, mm-hmm. He should be back probably sometime next week. So I guess we'll see what happens there. But, you know, the power that they tried to get, it hasn't really, you know, they're tied for third right now in home runs with 10.
Right.
But
nine of those 10 have been solo home runs.
Exactly. And they're not getting anybody on base because they're not making contact like they were. They've never been a good on base team in terms of walks, although Lorenzo Cain has had 8 walks, I think.
Nine
in 7 games. So, yeah. You know, some Royals have gotten off to hot starts before in terms of walking and then just gone back to their normal things. But maybe Lorenzo Cain, as he's gotten older, has started to develop a little bit. We'll see how that turns out. But and then of those 10 home runs, 4 belong to Mike Moustakas and 4 belong to Salvador Perez. So
they're not even guys you acquired. They're guys you
already had. So
the power was in you the whole time.
So they did have a Brandon Moss home run. So there's one.
Sure, the other one gave him a lead too. And
exactly.
Then
and then they lost it that very next same inning. And then the other one belongs to Eric Hosmer. So, you know, he does have his one home run, but, you know, the rest has been pretty lackluster. So, you know, the power that they were hoping hasn't really been there. And even if it does show up, you know, again, like we just said, 9 out of 10 home runs are solo. They need people on base for those to matter, for those to count.
Yep.
And, you know, regardless, even though Brandon Moss, we talked about the one home run, that's essentially it for Brandon Moss. He has been terrible besides that as well.
He has walked,
I guess I haven't really, again, I haven't seen all the games, but it seems like every time I see him at bat, he strikes out looking bad. We knew that was part of the deal. You know, you knew Brandon Moss was a big strikeout guy. So, you know, it's not necessarily surprising that he was strikeout. I didn't realize
he has 10 strikeouts in 21 plate appearances. So
yeah, you know, and he's got
but 5 walks.
Yeah, so
but
he's right now he's he's at a 24, close to 24% walk rate. So you know, right now that's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
I heard on the radio, they talked about Moss having 10 strikeouts and in 7 games or 5 games that he's played, and they mentioned the 1985 season by George Brett where he struck out a total of 24 times the entire season. So
different time,
absolutely. And yeah, they did bring up the point. They're like, Mike Trout is universally considered the best player in baseball, and he struck out 137 times last year.
Yeah,
but he also walked 116 times.
Yeah.
So you know,
fair.
You know, there's all fair points. that being said, you know, it's just Brandon Moss. He hasn't. You know, he's got a 0.063 batting average. He's not doing all that great. So, you know, the offense has really been struggling, and they're, you know, they scored what, 5 runs total in their first 3 games against the Twins.
Yeah.
So, you know, they lost 7-1, they lost 9-1, they lost 5-3. They woke up a little bit in Houston.
Yeah.
Put up some more scores, but then, you know, they get back to face Oakland. And you know, in fairness,
Jarrell Cotton gave him the business.
The real deal, man. It was lights out that game. So it's tough to fault him too much for that. They kind of ran into a buzzsaw a little bit, but all the same, you know, they got absolutely nothing going against him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're sitting at 2-5, and we've kind of talked about their issues. The bullpen hasn't been that great. You know, they Brandon Moss gets his one home run, takes the lead against Houston, 9th inning, you think, boom, Kelvin Herrera comes
Let's shut it down.
Let's go home with a sweep of the Astros. Royals come back to Kauffman, 3-3, looking to win that home opener and get back onto the winning record. And then Kelvin Herrera blows the save, gives up a home run. They lose it in 10 innings after Strom walks in the walk-off, a literal walk-off run. and so, you know, and it's –
that was a rough game.
Yeah. There's not a ton else to talk about, you know, because we're still kind of waiting for a lot of things to shake out with the Royals. But, you know, after the first week, those are kind of the observations that we've had. You know, just there's the power hasn't necessarily been there. But, you know, sometimes
the power has been there and hasn't been productive.
That's true. That's a good point. Good qualifier for it.
Yeah.
And you know, the offense hasn't been there, even if the power has, I should have said.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, hitting takes the longest to wake up, I think, you know, with based on weather. Though they haven't really had truly inclement weather. I mean, I guess the weather in Minnesota
was cold.
It was cold. So, you know, I guess we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, it's a disappointing start to the season. But you've also got to remember the Royals are 2-5. They easily could be 4-3, as you mentioned, because they could have held on to that lead against the Twins. They could have not blown the save against the Astros. Could be 4-3, but they're not. They're 2-5. Even still, they're 2-5, and they've played some of the worst baseball we've seen in the last
four years.
So, I mean, there's some positivity to be had from that because
– a little bit.
Yeah, and it's not as though – things that could change would be outlandish. You know, it's possible for Mike Moustakas, not necessarily to keep the home run pace, but to keep, you know, how well he's been playing offensively, to keep that rolling. We've seen him do it for an entire season. It's possible that could happen. Mm-hmm. You know, Sal Perez, it's likely that he'll keep this pace for the first half and then wear down as he always does.
Probably.
You know, Eric Hosmer, he'll have his ups and downs. He's on a down right now, but he's going to shoot back up. He's going to have May and June. He'll probably look like, you know, he's the every bit worth the $200 million. And then in July, he'll disappear again. You know, that's how Eric Hosmer is. You know, Alex Gordon, he's a little bit more of a wild card because we don't know how much of his last season was injury-related and how much is him battling his own age. So we'll see with Alex Gordon. He's kind of up in the air. He needs to be big, though. He needs to be better. Because as the leadoff man, he can be a catalyst for a lot of these things. And then, you know, Lorenzo Cain, we know he can be better. It's very encouraging to see him walk more recently. you know, I mean, Alcides Escobar, that's your big concern. And that's what I think Dave Lesky, one of his big concerns was going into the season, that no matter what happens offensively, Escobar, Mondesi, and Orlando, it's just a gigantic hole for one third of your lineup. Mm-hmm. So you can have six guys that are fantastic, but if you're not getting anything from those three guys, it's going to hurt you.
Rally ends. And then when Moustakas comes up later, well, it's a home run, but it's still a home run.
Yeah, and it looks like that's going to be the case, because we all know Escobar is, you know, as he was last year, one of the worst everyday hitters in baseball.
Yep.
And that's just, that's kind of who he is. We have to accept that. And so, you know, that is what that is. Orlando had a pretty good season last year, but some of it was smoke and mirrors, and it seems like he's coming back down to earth. And then Mondesi, we already talked about. So, you know, the indications of what could get better for that lower half of the lineup, there doesn't seem to be much hope for that right now. Who knows what we're going to see? You know, I don't know. We've seen Escobar hit 290 before, so it can happen. You know, he could heat up, and he does have his streaks. He'll probably have, you know, not quite Hosmer level, but he'll have a couple weeks where he'll hit,
like 10 hits in a week.
Yeah, he'll hit 450 for a week and maybe hit a home run or two and steal a couple bases, and everyone will be like, oh, shortstop Jesus, you know, and it'll be great. He'll make a couple web gems. And speaking of which, Lorenzo Cain may have already sewn up the catch of the year that he had down in Houston, robbing George Springer, was it?
Yeah.
George Springer,
who's hit a billion homers already.
Yeah, and thank God they got rid of that just gigantically stupid hill in Houston, because that might have been right where Cain was running and could have been an injury.
I think he was pretty clear from that.
He was to the right of where the like hill monument is.
Yeah,
towards right field. So I don't think he would have hit it, but
still, I'm glad.
I'm gonna blame it anyway.
It's fair.
Yeah,
totally fair.
So you know that. Honestly, that may be the high point of the season. Really,
played in Houston and the hill was gone.
Well, I was talking more about Lorenzo Cain's catch.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
The hill being gone is very, very
top
much
five.
A high point. Yes. So I don't know. That's kind of all my thoughts I've had. Do you have anything else that you wanted to?
I can offer a couple of positives that we can finish on.
Please do.
One, Kyle Zimmer's in Omaha. His body's still intact.
Pitching. He's pitching in Omaha. He's not visiting the zoo.
He is scheduled to start tomorrow, I think. Tomorrow or maybe the next day. I don't remember which I saw. So he fills in for Junis, and I think Eric Skoglund is starting tonight in place of Scott Alexander. So that's one positive. The other positive is the starting rotation has been pretty good. Duffy's given up only 3 runs. Ian Kennedy's been the worst starter, and his ERA is still, you know, 4.07 in a couple of starts. Nate Karns, as a starter, only gave up 1 run in Houston in 5.2 innings. Jason Vargas looked great. Jason Hamill was okay against the Twins. He's starting out. Looks like he's doing okay so far tonight. So overall, the Royals.
Excuse me. Rotation has been exactly what we thought, almost what we needed it to be.
Like interesting, steady. You can see how good they could possibly be, at least through one and a one turn plus. So you know that's good. Or as a unit, as starters again, because Karns gave up some runs as a reliever, so you have to qualify. But as starters, 2.88 ERA entering today. That will play. Can't figure that'll continue at that great level all year, but you know, Jason Vargas looked fantastic against Houston. The changeup was great. He's only throwing 87, but the changeup was going all over the place, and the Astros couldn't do anything with it. So if he has command of that, he's going to be fine. And you know, if he's fine, that makes this whole rotation pretty comfortable to me. So we'll see how that goes. I mean, they're going to have their ups and downs, but I think they're going to be much more stable than last year, which is a good thing. And if that allows the rest of the team to catch up, then maybe this first week will just be a crappy blip on the radar, and we can get over it, and the summer will be really fun and exciting. If the rotation tanks and nothing else goes right, well, we're going to be talking a lot about prospects and trades in the second half of the season because there's not going to be a whole lot of positive left, I don't think.
Indeed.
So, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, there's 155 games left in the season.
Plenty of time for lots of these things to write. And for the majority of it, I'm not all that concerned. I'm not concerned. You know, Soria's been looking good, too, for another
positive. Soria's looked good. Chris Young's
Yeah. You know, and I'm not concerned about Herrera one bit. You know, I think, and I think, you know,
in,
Kane,
in like
Hosmer,
25 other stadiums, the ball that went out against Herrera is a double in the corner,
right?
And he gets stranded.
Yeah, and you know, Hosmer, Gordon, Kane, et al. You know, I'm not super concerned. There's a little level of concern that's different for each player, but for the most part, I'm pretty confident those guys are going to get on track at some point. You know, it's just when will that be? So hopefully it starts tonight, and you know, hopefully they, as the off days start to decrease, maybe they can get more into a rhythm. You know, I'm not one to really try and blame any of that kind of stuff, but you know, there's a little bit of reality to it. So hopefully, you know, they can get into a rhythm, start playing every day, getting used to that, and kind of write some of these things here. It's not, you know, it's the one thing about, if this is the worst baseball the Royals have played all year, then at least they've got it out of the way, I guess, right? You know? So, I don't know. Let's hope it is. So
let's hope.
Yes, indeed.
Royals, well, 2017 slogan.
Let's hope. Hope. That's what it should have been. You know,
should have been. Royals, there's a lot of years where let's hope should have been
yes,
the slogan.
That's actually what it means to be raised Royals, that your slogan is let's hope.
Exactly.
So
let's hope.
Anyway. Well, with that, I think we'll leave you. So thank you so much for listening. As always, be sure to visit Kelly's. Go to BP Kansas City. Clint Scholes dropped another really good prospect article today. I haven't had a chance. I've been busy today, so I haven't had a chance to read it. But I'm told that it's very good. So definitely,
good.
Yeah. I mean, it's always good when Clint writes his stuff on the prospects. But today especially. So give that a look. Dave Leske has some thoughts on the slow start as well. On the site, so you know, be sure and check that out. Lots of great stuff, and it's only going to get better as the season rolls on. So
let's hope.
Yeah, again, let's hope. That's the BP Kansas City motto as well. Let's hope. So
we can't really share all of our mottos, I don't think. It's a family podcast.
Family podcast. So with that, we'll leave you. We'll be back next week. Be sure to check in then. We'll have way more Royals baseball to talk about. Hopefully a lot more positive Royals baseball to talk about. Until then, thanks for stopping by. We'll see you next week. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com. Every town has a place where elites gather for witty conversations over trendy cocktails. In Kansas City, that place is definitely not Kelly's Westport Inn. From its humble beginnings at the corner of Westport Road and Pennsylvania Avenue, Kelly's Westport Inn has seen it all. Pioneer wagon trains filled with families heading west, Civil War battles, and Major League Baseball championships. Kelly's is born of history and tradition, and we hope you'll allow us to become part of your history and traditions as well. Kelly's Westport Inn, 500 Westport Road, Kansas City, Missouri.